Today we'll be looking at James 5, 1-6, all about money, or more precisely, the dangers of having wealth. But today we will listen to the passage at the end. Now, in some countries, haggling is a way of life. You go to the markets and you have to observe this ritual of haggling or you get ripped off. We had a holiday in Morocco years ago and visited the souks in Marrakesh Old Town. For virtually all the cheaper items, the price would start at 300 dirhams, that's roughly £25. So you would turn away saying too expensive, and then they'd immediately drop the price to 200 dirhams. Those tourists who knew what they were doing would say, I'll give you 20. From there, the price would drop to 150, to 100, to 80, to 50, to 40, to 30, until you eventually agreed something between 20 and 30. We haggled over some hats one day, got the price down from 300 to 15, and bought 10 of them. The woman seemed quite pleased. The next day, we decided we'd like 5 more, so we went back to the same woman. She remembered us, but then, looking slightly phased, she lapsed into her usual pitch and demanded 300. I still think about that woman. We paid her £1 for each hat. I don't know what it cost her to make them or what kind of living she was eking out from her takings, but I clearly had the fatter wallet. On another occasion, in another country, Lois gave a bloke the price he was asking. As we walked away, I looked back and saw him holding up the banknote to a friend with a huge grin on his face. I suppose in every age and in every place there are the haves and the have-nots, and the level of not having will vary from one country to the next. There are some quite sophisticated measures of wealth these days, which look beyond gross national product to life expectancy and years of education on offer. The 10 poorest countries are all in Africa, with Chad, where our missionaries are working, coming in at number 4. Children get less than 2.5 years schooling in Chad, and life expectancy is 53 years. They also have to contend with Boko Haram, the Islamist group, so that huge numbers have been displaced. The poorest country is apparently Niger, where half the population live in extreme poverty. That's 21.5 million people. I can well imagine that when you visit a country like that, it puts your life in perspective. Last Thursday, I went through my bottom drawer and pulled out about 10 pairs of trousers that I haven't worn in years. Nothing wrong with them, except that I can't button all of them up anymore. Anyway, I put them on the table outside the food bank, and by 2 o'clock, they'd all gone. So, we're back to the topic of money and wealth, because it crops up a lot in the Bible. We all need money, and we all want money, and people who've just won the lottery are nearly always smiling. This passage is particularly about rich people. There may not have been that many in the churches James was writing to. Paul said of one church, not many of you were rich or of noble birth. And James says in verse 7, be patient then, brothers and sisters, as though the rich people he was describing were not followers of Christ. On the whole, the content of these verses is not very uplifting. James is issuing a warning. As we will see from verse 7 onwards, the underlying message is that one day the tables will be turned. Jesus used to say, the first shall be last, and he told the story of a rich man and a beggar, and how Lazarus, the poor beggar, finished up in paradise, but the rich man was in torment. So warns James. Here are two dangers for the rich to be aware of. The first, and I'll be brief on this one, is hoarding. In verse 3 he says, you have piled up riches in these last days. Now, I'm not sure what the precise difference between saving and hoarding is. The founder of Methodism, John Wesley, lived a frugal life and used to say that if he died with £10 to his name, he should be dismissed as a thief and a robber. But then Wesley married a wealthy widow, had no kids, and as a popular preacher, spent his life living off other people's hospitality. Lesser mortals have to be more careful with their money. We're also being reminded that it's important to spend, otherwise the economy buckles. Next month you can eat out at vastly reduced prices, a government initiative to reinvigorate the hospitality industry. Economics is important, and most rich people do pay a higher tariff to the government in income tax, all of which keeps the wheels turning. But James sees things more simply. He sees people who have too much. They have unused clothes being eaten by moths, and they have gold and silver getting rusty. Okay, technically speaking, gold and silver don't rust, but money was made to be used, not hoarded. Perhaps we think that the money is ours and we can do with it as we like. We overlook the fact that the abilities we employ to earn this money are given to us by God. And so I like the Anglican prayer, spoken responsively as the offering is blessed. All things come from you, O God, and of your own have we given you. So that's hoarding. But then perhaps more importantly for us, and the bit we need to listen to more in verses 4-6, is the hurting. This is what James writes. You have not paid any wages to those who work in your fields. Listen to their complaints. The cries of those who gather in your crops have reached the ears of God, the Lord Almighty. You have condemned and murdered innocent people, and they do not resist you. Even though we always seem to have lived in a capitalist society which makes some rich and leaves others in poverty, we do need from time to time to remember that Moses, the prophets and Jesus were very passionate about those people at the bottom. The class differences in James' day were huge. The poor worked the fields of the rich, and that word translated fields could be translated estates. Whoever owned the land had a huge advantage in life. Money is the bedfellow of self-interest, power, control, and oppression. This country, England, had a civil war in the 1640s. There were two groups who lobbied hard for a fairer society, the levellers and the diggers. Their names are very suggestive, for their movements were all about equality and ownership of land. Oliver Cromwell, apparently the champion of parliamentary democracy, whose statue stands outside the Houses of Parliament, disliked this early expression of socialism, and he silenced them by executing their leaders. That moment is memorialised in the Oxfordshire town of Burford. The levellers were made to stand at the top of the church and watch as their leaders were shot below. Every year, socialists make an annual pilgrimage to the site of the executions. The levellers may have been silenced, but we as Christians cannot ignore the plight of others. That doesn't mean giving money to everyone who asks you. We all need to be a bit savvy. But it does mean living generously and compassionately. In the years following World War II, a movement began in South America which developed into a theology, liberation theology. The political icons of that era are people like Che Guevara and Fidel Castro, but it was a tiny Catholic priest, Helder Camara, who took the stage in Brazil. He felt that the real struggle was not between the ideologies of the communist East and the capitalist West, but the economic equalities between the rich North and the impoverished South. He became an archbishop in the 1960s, at pretty much the same time as a right-wing military coup in Brazil, but his voice rang out fearlessly against their policies of repression. He once said, "When I give food to the poor, they call me a saint, but when I ask why the poor have no food, they call me a communist." In reality, he agreed with the Marxist analysis of capitalism, but not its awful expression in the communist movements of the 20th century. For him, socialism was to be embraced, not imposed. He attended the Second Vatican Council in the early 1960s and pushed for the church to more closely identify with the poor. He even suggested that the Pope should move out of St. Peter's Basilica and into a more modest dwelling. You've probably guessed that his suggestion was not taken up. Later, a colleague was murdered, and so the police, fearing the damage to their reputation abroad should he also be killed, offered him round-the-clock protection. "I already have guards," he said. "Who?" they asked. "The Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit," he replied. He was not averse to exploiting his position of influence. On one occasion, an activist was arrested and beaten up by the police. The bishop phoned the police chief and said, "I hear you've arrested my brother." The man was immediately released, and the archbishop justified his words. "Well, he is my brother in Christ." On his retirement, his relentless campaigning, an embarrassment to some in the Roman Catholic Church, was silenced in the most cynical way possible. The Pope replaced him with a conservative. Heroes like Helder Camara are few and far between, for the danger of having money, according to James, is that you finish up on the wrong side. You protect your interests at the expenses of doing the right thing, and in so doing you hurt other people. When the Twin Towers of the World Trade Center were attacked on the 11th September 2001, several people passing by rushed down to help. The scene was chaotic as survivors exited, and firefighters made their way up the stairs, never to return. Both towers collapsed in a sickening spectacle, and a great cloud of dust spread across several blocks. Many of those who had rushed to help subsequently developed breathing problems, but when they put in claims to their health insurers, they were refused any compensation on the grounds that they shouldn't have got involved. They should have left it to the professionals, they were told. Make no mistake, the people who opposed Jesus were not the struggling poor, but those who had much to lose if he rose to power. They had stacked the system in their own favour. So we must be clear about money. It's a wonderful servant, but a terrible master. You can either use money to love people or love money and use people. Good for you if you know how to walk the tightrope between good and evil, because most of us are not good tightrope walkers. So may we all discern the meaning of true wealth and learn the art of generosity in the process. So let's now hear the words of James. And now, you rich people, listen to me. Weep and wail over the miseries that are coming upon you. Your riches have rotted away and your clothes have been eaten by moths. Your gold and silver are covered with rust, and this rust will be a witness against you and will eat up your flesh like fire. You have piled up riches in these last days. You've not paid any wages to those who work in your fields. Listen to their complaints. The cries of those who gather in your crops have reached the ears of God, the Lord Almighty. Your life here on earth has been full of luxury and pleasure. You have made yourselves fat for the day of slaughter. You have condemned and murdered innocent people, and they do not resist you. This is the word of the Lord.